sunglasses on. I'm at a funeral.
Oh, sunglasses. Yeah.
Are we live? Fuck it. Welcome back to the Boneyard Podcast, everybody. This is your host, Jared Chaffet, along with my good friend, long-time Artemis friend, Brower. Best friend, Artemis Brower. Sorry to cut you off, Artie.
That's all right.
And we got a long-time friend of the podcast, one of our other very good friends, best friends, Brandon Avery. Brandon, Artie, how we doing, fellas?
Hey, always a good time joining the fellas. Love pinch hitting. Love seeing your faces. Love being around. Love being part of the party. Let's get it, guys.
Let's do it. It feels like I'll tell you guys off air before we join. It feels like it's been years since I've done a podcast. So let's do it. Let's get into it.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it last week on the podcast. It felt like there hasn't been an episode where it was just Artie and I or where like that was, it was just the two of us.
Yeah.
Josh has been doing a lot of pinch hitting for us. We're doing lately. Great. And then Josh is on he's on the bench this week. We gave Josh a week off after all of his great work at the spring game this weekend and at the baseball games. So, shout out to Josh. Honestly, he's one of the best things that's happened to the podcast, just being completely honest. All right, guys, episode 193. 193.
Creeping on 200, baby. Creeping on 200.
It's crazy. It feels like just yesterday we were recording episode 100 with Coach Mike Houston.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's wild, honestly, that it's – I mean, we've almost done 100 episodes here in my house, you know, like before this, I was in three different locations while we were recording episodes. Yeah. Up from episode 1 to 100, three different locations. Last 100 episodes, same location. So, but Artie, Brandon, number 93. Artie, we'll go to you first. You got one?
I do have a 93 for this week. This is one of the homegrown talent. Well, I shouldn't say homegrown because he's not from Chicago. But one of my favorite guys, defensive end, big ugly. But Calais Campbell, that's my 93 for the week. Solid pick. You can say, you know, that's a chalk pick. But, you know, I haven't picked Calais Campbell before. I don't think we've brought his name up on this podcast before. So that's my 93 for the week. Running by his stats, I think he's definitely a first ballot Hall of Famer. Played at the University of Miami. Walter Payton, NFL Man of the Year in 2019. First team All-Pro in 2017. 2017, two-time second team All-Pro. Six-time Pro Bowler. 2010's All-Decade Team. Bart Starr Award. Art Rooney Award winner. He's got all the accolades except for the actual big-time trophy itself. But Calais Campbell, 93. One of the best defensive ends of the last 15 to 20 years. Can't even be questioned. So that's my 93 for the week.
It's a good one. It's a good one. Brandon, 93.
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of, you know, the first time you guys went through 100, you picked a jersey number. And then the second time around, I've been a big fan of, like, stats or dates or some kind of something else. You know,
I hope you don't take the one I had.
I threw Artie the assist on 81 with the 81 Kobe game.
Yes, he did.
So for 93, my number and Walk the Plank today have a sports theme. But we'll get to that later in due time. The 93 for me is going to be the 1993 NFL draft. Is that where you were going, Jared?
No, that's not where I was going. So
perfect. the 1993 NFL draft, number one overall pick, was a little-known player to a little-known organization, Drew Bledsoe, to the New England Patriots.
Of course he went to his Patriots. Of course he did.
So, Pac-12 Player of the Year his junior year, number one overall to the New England Patriots. A struggling franchise, obviously, number one overall pick. Got to be not doing too hot. Let's see, youngest quarterback ever to play in the Pro Bowl in 1995. He won Super Bowl 36, four-time Pro Bowler in 94, 96, 97, and 2002. Passing yard leader in 1994 and in the all-1990s Pats team. He currently holds the records for most pass attempts in an NFL game with 70. And all these years later, he is tied for the most completions in an NFL game with Jared Goff at 45. The biggest thing that Drew Bledsoe did was get out of the way. Famously, early in 2001, took a brutal but clean hit and stepped aside for the backup quarterback, a little known fella named Thomas Edward Brady stepped in. And, you know, rest is history. I wonder what happened to that guy.
Went on, married a supermodel.
Divorced a supermodel. Yeah, I honestly forget. Like, Drew Bledsoe really did have a really good career. Like he was like a legit quarterback. I honestly understand why he was like salty while Tom Brady took his place. But you know, the rest is history. So
that's a good one. That's a good one. I mean,
I got the text message from Jared to hop onto this maybe an hour ago, and I was like, if I'm gonna be here, I'm gonna do my job. So there you go, boys.
Little caveat though. Since you are a Patriots fan, we're talking quarterbacks. Are you guys picking a quarterback? And if so, who are you picking with the third pick?
So I think they're playing a bunch of smoke and mirrors right now. I don't know that they've 100% decided. So at one point it was, we're really content being the number three pick and we're happy to take a quarterback. And then it was, well, you know, the door's always open. If you want to make an offer, we're always going to listen. So I don't know that they know. I think there's some decent talent in the draft, but I'm not as sold on Drake May as everyone else seems to be. I think he's had flashes of greatness, but I think he underachieved at Carolina. I think that's fair to say, and that's not just because we're an ECU podcast. I think the hype for him was real, and I think he underachieved. I think he could be a good quarterback. I don't know that he's the franchise face. I don't know that he's going to be the guy to come in and fix your franchise. I think if it was the Pats of old and Bill Belichick was still pulling the strings, we would trade that three in a heartbeat for a heist of picks. But it's a new regime, and we'll see where we go. I would love to see Marvin Harrison Jr. That's just me. There you go, Jared. What's your 93?
My 93, so 1993 was 31 years ago, right? Yeah. And the NHL playoffs start this weekend. First game of the playoffs, actually, is Carolina Hurricanes taking on the New York Islanders, 5 o'clock on Saturday. If you want to reach me, do not call me during that time. But 1993... 31 years ago was the last time a team from the country of Canada won a Stanley Cup. That was the Montreal Canadiens. Okay. So that's my 1993. It's been 31 years since, you know, a country where that's all they do is play hockey.
Right.
Won a Stanley Cup.
Crazy.
Embarrassing.
You look back, if you look back at before then, I mean, and you really have to go back to 1990. I mean, late 80s in 1990, you had a run. You had a run of, I mean, the 80s, pretty much the Stanley Cup stayed in Canada. You had Edmonton going on a nice run. Montreal won in 86, but in 93, it was the last time that a Canadian team won the Stanley Cup. If I'm going to throw out a trivia question. So it's been 31 years since a Canadian team has won the Stanley Cup. Can y'all guess how many years it's been since the Toronto Maple Leafs have won a Stanley Cup? Take a wild guess.
40. Not a huge hockey guy, but just doing the math, it has to be over 31 years.
Hey, yeah, there you go.
So I'm going to take a swing in the dark and say 57.
Close, 56.
Oi, you gotta give your boy that one. That was close enough.
That's good.
1967 was the last time the Toronto Maple Leafs won a Stanley Cup.
That is crazy.
And oh, about, you know, the year just changed, so that rolls over to 57. So
no. All right, guys, let's get into it. First off, shout out the College Huddle. Artie and I were proud to be members of the College Huddle. I mean, just the group of people that we're working with and the other podcasts that are in this thing, they're phenomenal. So if you're wanting to get content on, I mean, there's over 70, I think almost over 75 podcasts represented, and we're your podcast for ECU that's represented. There's other podcasts here at ECU, but they chose the premier podcast. So, yeah, if you're looking for content on NC State, Chapel Hill, Coastal Carolina, Old Dominion, Duke, Virginia Tech, I mean, everybody's pretty much covered. We got big dogs, we got heavy hitters, we got some of the smaller schools. We're working our way to all of D1 football being covered up by the College Huddle, and lots of great content going to start coming out from us with the College Huddle this summer. So stay tuned. But Artie, moving along, this past weekend you weren't there. You were getting off a boat. Hope the cruise went well.
Very nice.
My man had prior engagements, some would say.
Yeah. We can save that conversation for another time, but Brandon and I were at the spring game,
yeah,
and it was absolutely phenomenal. Just you felt an energy in the air, right? It felt like I've gone to plenty of these spring games, and it's like, oh, okay, ho hum, like this is just another spring game. It's run in the mill. Going into this spring game, it felt different. It felt like there was a new energy within the fan base that was there, within the roster that was there, and even within the coaches. It just felt different being there at this spring game. Brandon, you were there with me. Wanted to see what you thought.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think, as you said, you could just feel that the energy was. I mean, we like to say that football, baseball, whatever is different in Greenville. We're a passionate fan base. We're always going to support our team. But I agree, it did. You could feel the energy in Greenville. I kind of had three big takeaways from the spring game. I'll just rattle through them real quick. The first of which being speed. JDB came in and took over the offense, and he's told us and promised us and hammered it in like a nail with a hammer. We're going to be fast. This ball is going to move, and speed is what we're going to do. And I'll be dang if he wasn't right. The ball was moving. It didn't matter which quarterback was behind center. Speed was the name of the game. I believe we opened the scrimmage with two back-to-back touchdown drives in under 3 minutes. The ball was moving. Speed is going to be the name of our game. Now, speaking of the quarterbacks, that kind of segues me into the second takeaway. It's encouraging yet frustrating that we have the quarterback battle that we do right now. We have two very competent quarterbacks. Seeing the both of them take snaps this weekend, it's easy to say they're both competent quarterbacks, and I think either of them taking the starting job will play significantly better than any quarterback play we've seen in Greenville. I'm not going to give a time frame, but let's just say for a while. No insult to those other guys who stepped up and did what was needed of them. We appreciate them. We love them. But these two guys are different. Now, like I said, it's encouraging but frustrating because if you think back to last season where we were in a similar position, had two quarterbacks where you didn't really know who was the starter from week to week.
Can I jump in here? Because I was thinking about this earlier today. I was thinking about this quarterback competition and how it compares to last year. And the way I would say last year's quarterback competition stacks up compared to this year's was last year's was the Walmart version of this year's quarterback competition.
Great value, Brent.
Like,
really?
Look, we've got a new Garcia and we got Kane Hauser, right? Like, but this time it's like, to be honest, like going in, I was fully expecting Kane Hauser to be the guy. Right. After watching Jake Garcia, I was like, I don't know. It's an embarrassment of riches right now at the quarterback position. Mm-hmm. Not to mention you have Raheem Jeter, the third string, who he's got the speed and he didn't get an opportunity to sling the ball, but he was out there and he didn't crap the bed, right? Like, of course he was running with the threes. That's to be expected, but Kane Hauser and Jake Garcia, they were impressive to me on Saturday.
I agree completely, and that's kind of where I was heading with that. Was last year it was kind of a quarterback battle of necessity where neither of them really stepped up, whereas this year it's a quarterback battle of opportunity where we have two competent players who I have no doubt either of them will play the role perfectly. That being said, if you were to ask me right this second which of the two I think or want to be the number one guy, I say Kaden Hauser. I think number four has it. Colin Cowherd, polarizing figure. He's got this thing called quarterback face where you want your quarterback to look like a quarterback.
Yeah.
And Jared was standing with me in the concourse when Kaden Hauser comes in and he's with his family. And I just look at him and I look at Jared and I look back and I tell him, he looks like a quarterback. Like, that's my quarterback. So seeing the guy in person and watching him play, four is my guy. But either way, as I said, we have two competent choices. I'm not worried unless a decision isn't made. That's my only worry in the quarterback room.
I was just going to ask, do you think that this coaching staff understands this season, no matter whether you have a gang of riches, are they going to be able to make the decision? It's okay. This is the guy number one. We're going with him, bar none.
Well, Houston addressed it himself that they plan to have that decided. He understands that it needs to be decided well before the season opens so that guy can build that relationship in the locker room. Mm-hmm. But also, if we go back to the statements he made prior about JDB taking over and truly having full reign of that offense, I think he understands if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have a quarterback. So I think that decision will be made as soon as possible, but definitely with time for the adjustment prior to the start of the season.
I think by the time we get fully into fall camp, I think they'll go through summer camp still in a competition. But I think by the time it gets ready to roll into fall camp, we have a clear idea of who the one and who the two is. And right now, like you said, Brandon, I was fully on Kane Hauser being the guy early on. But after watching Garcia, I'm like, okay, maybe not. And we always say it. We said it last year, and we were wrong about it. But we always say that iron sharpens iron, right? Like having two guys battling it out. I mean, that's what all you could ask for. And knowing that you have these guys that are going to be able to step up and step into the role if the other one goes down, that's what's impressive to me. Talking to Kaden earlier when he first committed to ECU, when we had him on, knowing that he was going after and being a heavy recruiter told me a lot about his character. But also, like, when talking to Jake Garcia, that was the first time I really had gotten a chance to talk to him. It was the character stood out from him too. Like, those two guys seem like true leaders. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that we kept saying last year on the offense was there wasn't a – like, yeah, you had Raj, but you didn't have a true leader on offense. You didn't have that guy that was going to be the quarterback, be the captain of the offense. Raj was just kind of the elder statesman from the skill guys, right? I think these two guys coming in, coming from where they've been at Missouri, at Michigan State, being in these Power Five programs, knowing what it takes, knowing how to talk to the media, all of that, I think, like you said, I think they both look like quarterbacks. I think one looks kind of like a Trevor Lawrence, and then the other one looks kind of like a West Coast offense like guy. And it was interesting to me to see them and see how they interacted with each other. It never seemed like last year Alex Flynn and look, Alex Flynn's a friend of the podcast. Mason Garcia, we've talked with him. He's a friend of the podcast. Mm-hmm. It never seemed like there was ever a time where either of them were confident enough to be the starter. Both of these guys feel confident enough to be the starter at East Carolina University. And whatever happens, they're going to be ready to go. They're going to still compete into the year, but they're going to be ready to go. There's not going to be this flip-flopping that we saw last year.
I agree completely, and that just takes me to my third and final takeaway, and that was the defense is still a Blake Carroll defense. There were a couple quick scores. Sorry?
No, I'm just saying Blake Carroll for president.
Oh, absolutely. But so, like we said before, there were a couple early quick scores in the game. We were without some of our bigger defensive pieces in this scrimmage. And at the end of the day, even though early the offense did thrive, you left there saying this defense is more than capable of stopping two highly quality quarterbacks. The defense came up with multiple turnovers. I believe they scored twice off of those turnovers. I'm not in the least bit worried about this defense or Blake Harrell, and that's that.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, yeah, we saw the high-powered offense. We saw the speed. And real quick, before we go any further, I do want to play this clip of Coach Houston talking about the new offense.
It's everything we're doing revolves around that offensively. You know, it's going to result in, you know, we're probably going to play 25 to 30 snaps more a game this year than last year. Now we got to be ready defensively that, you know, we're probably going to play more snaps defensively this year. So, it's what we want to do. You know, I wanted, you know, when you look at making a change and evolving, I want to do something that was drastically different than what we've done before. I think that our kids are so excited about the new offense. It's everything we're doing revolves around that offensively. You know, it's going to result in, you know, we're probably going to play 20.
That was just listening to him talk about the offense was something that excited me, because we know how conservative Mike Houston has been in the past. And he talked about, and in the media scrum, he talked about, we wanted a different look. We wanted a different feel. And we saw that. And early on in the game, spring game, everybody was like, oh crap, like we've got this offense. Are we supposed to be excited about it? Or are we supposed to be worried about our defense? And then after the second quarter, the defense shut it down, right? And they came out to play ball. I think the offense was a little bit – it's a little bit different than what they've seen before. Granted, they're practicing against it every single day, week in, week out. But it still is. It's different. And it's not going to be the same offense that any team has seen from ECU since – what, 2014, 2015, mm-hmm. back in the Lincoln Riley days. That's what I'll say about it. And then you got to remember, this defense was a top 30 defense in the country last year. Right. And yeah, you lost a couple pieces, but you were able to replenish. One guy that really stood out to me was Raheem Craig, transfer from Louisville. He stood out to me. That guy was all over the place. He was flying around all over the place. pick six on Purple ended up sealing the game. Purple trailed pretty much the whole game. And then for it to be a freshman, Kamari McKinley, to pick that off, that was great. The thing with the offense and with having so many new pieces, Brandon, you talked about speed. It's going to take some time. Mm-hmm. It you got to remember, these guys have only really been playing together or practicing together for a month and a half, right? Like, these guys haven't been together. Now that they're together, they're going to continue to grow and build that confidence in each other, build that team mentality and that trust. We saw there were three interceptions in this game, right? And I wouldn't say that any of them were on the quarterback. They were on maybe misrun routes by the wide receivers. Now, to that point, these wide receivers, this is the first time a lot of them have worked with these quarterbacks. It's not like you have a C.J. Johnson and Holden Ahlers or a Justin Hardy, Shane Carden. You don't have that right now. These guys are all still trying to mesh. And I thought what Coach Houston said about the wide receiver play, I thought it was interesting. I'm going to play this clip here.
You know, Anthony Smith has had just an outstanding spring. But you also see, you know, guys that were here last year that just have excelled in this offense. Jari Patterson has had more explosive plays than anybody this spring. And you know, Keelan Robinson has had just a phenomenal spring. We all know what Chase Sowell can do, but seeing those other guys, Brock Spaulding, seeing those other guys that weren't here last, that were here last year, and they're just excelling in a new system.
Yeah, and they did excel. I mean, Jake Garcia and Anthony Smith seemed like they had a great connection early on, very early on. I mean, deep balls left and right. I mean, it was raining bombs in Dowdy-Ficklin Stadium, and the quarterbacks could pretty much just throw it up there, and the wide receiver was going to run up and under it and catch it. And it wasn't until later in the game where the defense really started to tighten up. I mean, they tightened up about midway through the second quarter running clock. But there's going to be a lot of points scored on for this ECU team, and I think the defense is going to be strong. Granted, it's the spring game. I'm not going to read too much into it. I'm going to stay composed. Right. I mean, I can't get too jolly about it just yet, but it's something to be excited about, Pirate Nation. This is what we've been wanting. We've been wanting a new look offense. It's not just a run it down your throat, run it up the middle, first, second down. Oh, we're third and nine. Okay, now let's throw a screen pass. It's not that anymore. You're gonna see a lot of balls thrown to the sticks on first down. You're going to see a playbook that looks different than anything you've seen over the last 4 years. Be ready for that and be excited about that. JDB has come and he's already starting to excite Pirate Nation. Every tweet I saw on Saturday was, yeah, we're good. ECU offense is back. ECU is back. And it's hard not to feel that way. It's hard not to feel that way watching this team. That's really, I mean, all I had on it. Overall, exciting day. Mm-hmm. Just an exciting day. I am really excited for where this program's going. And I think this team is going to scare a lot of programs, a lot of teams this fall. There's not anybody that I see on our schedule that I don't think is unbeatable. Mm-hmm. If this offense can mesh and can play well together, I just don't. Am I saying that we're going to go 12-0 and make it into the 12-team playoff? No, I'm not saying that at all. But I do think that this team is going to do a complete 180 from what we saw last year.
A very favorable schedule for a team that has a new regime, right? Like if you're going to pick a schedule for a new regime, new offense, new offensive coordinator, you would want this kind of a schedule, right? So it's very favorable.
Yeah. Yeah, I had several people that were there texting me saying, I don't care what the over-under is on ECU football, I'm hitting the over. I had more than four or five people text me that at the spring game. And I agree. I'm hitting smash that over.
Already took the words out of my mouth. I had multiple people reach out to me after I posted a picture at the game, like, hey, how are we looking? What's next season looking like? And I told every single one of them exactly what Artie just said. It's going to be a full 180. This offense is going to be an offense.
Yeah. Super excited. Now, some news that I'm not excited to share. Transfer portal has opened back up earlier this week, I believe on Monday or Tuesday. Some guys have already entered the portal. The big name entering is Shane Calhoun, ECU tight end. This came across, and I think everybody in the group chat was shocked.
Yeah.
Some more than others, but I mean, to be a multi-year starter, over 60 receptions, 6 touchdowns. I mean, he was kind of the guy that. In case of emergency, break glass and hey. Find Shane Calhoun.
Yeah.
That was the guy. And he's no longer going to be on this team. But I do think that much like the two top guys on at the quarterback position, I think that this tight end room has really filled out. Really liked what I saw from Casey Kelly on Saturday, transfer from Oregon. I think it's going to be okay. Shane's a great guy. I had the pleasure of talking with him multiple times, and he's a great guy. I wish him the best of luck, like we always do. But I think that he's going to be in a position where he's going to be the guy, right? He's always, I mean, going back 2 years ago, he was sharing the spotlight with Ryan Jones, right? Like last year, he finally got his shot, but the offense wasn't good enough to really do anything or get him the ball. Now you've got a bunch of guys in that tight end room. I mentioned Casey Kelly, Tyler Savage, Antonio Ferguson. Like you've got these guys that are gonna ball out, and it's too crowded, right? And we knew somebody was gonna probably leave. Shane left. He's probably gonna get an offer somewhere. In the Power Five, I saw he had an offer from Houston already, and Tegan Wilkes trying to get him in to be his roommate. So he's going to go somewhere, and he's going to get an opportunity, and he's going to go try to earn the bag. And we wish him the best of luck. He's one of those guys that he'll always be a Pirate no matter what. Brandon, Artie, what was y'all's take when you saw the news about Shane Calhoun?
Artie, you want to?
I mean, my question is, because he had to have known that he was a front runner to be the guy in that tight end room, right? Like he's the guy. He's multiple time starter, like you mentioned, the most experienced guy in that room. So do you feel he felt legitimately threatened by other guys in that room? I mean, you leave because you feel threatened, or you leave because you think you can actually go to another program or a bigger program and be the guy right away. But I mean, Shane Calhoun was, like, in my mind, he was going to be the guy for the season coming up in that tight end room. So do you think he felt legitimately threatened by guys that were coming in and said, okay, I gotta hit the road?
I do. I think what we saw from Tyler Savage in the back half of last year, starting to kind of come into his own, but also the fact that ECU went out and got a Casey Kelly out of Oregon that, I mean, he's kind of been all over the place and he's a proven guy. I think Casey Kelly's the one. And I don't think that with the speed that we have on offense now, I don't think that you're going to see a lot of two tight end sets in this JDB offense. So I don't think there's going to be as much opportunity for him, especially if, I mean, Casey Kelly is he's one of JDB's guys, right? Like, they've known each other for a while. He comes in, okay, this makes sense. He's going to be the guy. And I think Shane, being in his last year of eligibility, needed to go somewhere where he was going to – he needs to go somewhere where he's going to be the guy to try to make it to the draft. Brandon?
Yeah, just to put a bow on that, it's no secret I've been a Shane Calhoun fan. I mean, I've given him the nickname Big Play Calhoun since his first season here at ECU. Like, big fan of his game. I'm a big fan of tight end play generally, but I think he's a guy. I think he did his time here at ECU. I think he has contributed more than his fair share to the team. I think, as both of you have said, he did his part. He's doing what's best for him. No hard feelings at all. It's happy sales. Hope he finds somewhere that he can be productive and be better for his future. And I'll be pulling for him this season unless he pops up on the Pirates calendar. So happy sales, Shane Calhoun, you know?
Yeah, the only way that you won't get – you won't have fans here at the Boneyard Podcast is if you go to that school in Raleigh. That's the only way. You can go from being a friend of the podcast to an enemy of the podcast real quick. All right. Also, Kadarius Small entered the transfer portal today. Transferred in from JUCO in December. So, and then we can't forget Omega Blake, transfer from South Carolina, also entered the transfer portal. That one, I'll be honest, I wasn't that surprised. If there was going to be a wide receiver that went into the portal, that's who I figured it was going to be. And that wide receiver room is – it's full too. I mean, you got guys, Anthony Smith, Chase Sowell, Jari Patterson, Brock Spaulding had a good Saturday. You've got guys – I just don't think Omega Blake was going to be the guy here at ECU. He doesn't remind me of an Isaiah Winstead type coming in. Now, Anthony Smith does. Anthony Smith reminds me of that kind of guy that is going to come in and make an impact right away. So, best of luck to him. I think he's going to go off into – I think we talked about it in the group chat. I could see him going off into the MAC or another G5 school, and where he could be the sole guy at the wide receiver position.
I agree completely. I think this wide receiver room is stacked, and I don't think these guys transferring in had the respect for Chase Sowell that they should have had. I think they came in thinking this wide receiver room is going to be wide open with a new quarterback, and I can be the guy.
I don't care who you are. Chase Sowell is still wide receiver one.
Five is that guy. He's going to be the guy. I told him earlier this week. He's got an all-conference bag, and he's going for an all-conference bag. That man is going to get it this season. Chase Sowell is going to be the guy regardless of who lines up under center. And these wide receivers are taking notice. So
that's sure. Not even a hot take. I definitely think he's going to be all-conference. It's not even a hot take.
Mm-hmm. For sure. All right. Anything else on football before we put a bow on this and move along? I can talk football
all day.
All night long. Anything else? All right. Moving on, basketball. Transfer portal. Instead of, guys leaving the program, now somebody is coming to ECU. Guard out of Gardner-Webb, Julian Samaro. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that name correctly. Averaging 12 points per game last year with the Gardner-Webb. What are they? Are they the Bulldogs?
Yes.
The running Bulldogs, right? Y'all's feeling on bringing in Julian?
I don't know much about the guy. I got to do my research. Got to see what he's about. But finally, we bring somebody in, right? Like, it's not guys leaving. It's somebody coming into the program. So, we'll see. We'll see. Coming from Gardner-Webb, don't really know too much about the program, but I'm glad to see guys coming in and not going out.
Just to echo Artie, absolutely happy to see guys coming in instead of the mass exodus that we've already had this offseason. But way too early to tell, and one player a team does not make. So we've still got pieces to fill. So
right.
good start, but still plenty of work to go.
And I think this is Schwartz's thing, right? Like, he's basically told this roster, okay, He said, these are my guys, right? Like, get with the program or get out. And everybody got out except for RJ Felton. But with that being said, I think he's going to reload, right? Like it's going to be a total rebuild. It'll be interesting to see what he puts together. There's a lot of good names out there in the portal at some of the lower tier schools that have a lot of opportunity in some of the lower mid majors. There's a lot of guys, and you got to find somebody instead of maybe taking a risk on or bringing in somebody that was never going to be the guy at a Power Five school or at a blue blood. You may need to take a risk on somebody that wants to be the guy at the next step, right? I think that's what ECU is going to try to do this year. Last year they swung for the fences, brought in Cam Hayes, and they didn't get it done, right? Like that's my take. So anything else on basketball? I don't want to talk about basketball.
Quick and easy.
I don't want to talk about basketball. Nobody wants to talk about basketball. We're excited about football. ECU baseball has us excited.
Yes.
There's no reason to talk about basketball. Like, talk about the things that make you happy in life. And I'm not going to spend much time on this podcast this week talking about basketball. All right, baseball. Number 9 in the country, East Carolina University. Won the homestand this past weekend against Charlotte at home. And game one, absolutely electric. Trey Savage and Joey D. They teamed up to throw the second combined no-hitter and run rule a team, the second one in the span of, I believe, 4 days. That is absolutely elite. Savage, 6 innings pitched, 12 strikeouts. He's on the Golden Spikes Award watch list. Him and I believe it's Zach Root that's also on that list. Just an outstanding day, right? No hitting the 49ers. Then game two comes around and ECU wins that one. And then, unfortunately, game three. I've always said Sundays can be a toss-up in college baseball, no matter what. And ECU let the lead slip. I think one thing that hurt the Pirates was that, I mean, that was their fifth game of the week. You're usually used to playing four. And then, I mean, having to go take that bullpen deep into the bullpen, you start getting guys that maybe aren't as used to being in high leverage situations. And sometimes they struggle. And that's what happened on Sunday. The bullpen was just absolutely gassed. And they let Charlotte come back in and take the game. Y'all's thoughts on baseball this weekend?
Go ahead, Brent.
I'm kind of the mindset that no news is good news. You know, nothing crazy is happening for ECU baseball right now, and we're in a good place. I think at the beginning of the season, the sky was falling when we lost a midweek or two, and we've corrected that. We're winning our midweek games now. We're on a roll. We're number 9 in the country. We swept the conference awards this week. So I think keep doing your job. Keep doing your job.
Yeah, I would concur with that. The one thing I like though is that, you know, it feels like we're still flying under the radar. Even at number 9, we're still kind of flying under the radar, just doing what we need to do, handling our business. Sitting at 8-4 in the conference, so we can be a little we can be a little better in the conference. I know we're behind UTSA right now, second in the American. So like, there's still some work to do, right? There should still be some ambition, some hunger, some drive, some determination. It's not like we're perfect, but we're number 9 and we're under the radar. And we're doing exactly what we need to do. And that's exactly where I want ECU baseball at right now. No hype, just production.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that we've seen this from ECU in the past where they have these high expectations going into conference play, right? And then things don't go their way early on, but then they figure it out and they go on this heater. And they usually start this heater towards the end of April, beginning of May, and just absolutely start steamrolling their schedule. And looking at it, I mean, we're getting to that time where ECU really starts to ramp up for the postseason.
Yeah.
I think that it's going to be a completely – it's going to be the same mindset. This team has been there so many times that they know what to do. The guys that are on this team have built this culture to where they're going to compete day in, day out. No matter who you are, they're going to go out there. I'll say that I think EC will catch San Antonio. San Antonio's eventually got to drop a couple of games here and there, and EC's going to get back into it. But ECU really needs to start sweeping a series or two over the next 2 or 3 weeks. Granted, you've got a tough matchup with a program that, I mean, pretty much everybody we talked about them last year. I think they had 23 guys into the transfer portal at one point last year. Their whole roster pretty much flipped over. So that you've got a bunch of transfers on this Wichita State team that ECU plays this weekend. But I'll say this, ECU's battle tested. They've played one of the top non-conference strength of schedules in the country. I believe they're top 15 non-conference strength of schedule, top 10 RPI. All the factors point to them, if they just take care of their own business, being a top 8 seed, a national seed. And I think that they'll get there. They've got more big time matchups coming up. Got NC State next weekend. Alec Makarevich has to come back to Greenville for the first time.
Be fun.
Let me ask y'all. Let me put it to the crowd. Let me ask you. He's already seen ECU. That emotion is over. The first glimpse, right? Like seeing your ex for the first time. But now you're going to see your ex for the first time out to dinner with another man. What do you think is the what do you think is going to be the reaction inside Clark LeClair this coming Tuesday?
I think the old hands will be just fine. I think they're going to show him a lot of respect, a lot of love, a lot of admiration, and I think anybody under the age of 25, it's going to be nice and greased up, nice and oiled up, and let him hear. Now, if you're out there in the jungle, you have a job to do. So the jungle, you know, you gotta let him know. But I think it's going to be a 50-50 split. I think your older crowd is going to be respectful. Your younger crowd is going to let him know.
That is almost verbatim where I was going with that. I think your left field megaphones, who are a staple, they're older, respectable. I think they'll chirp, but I think it'll be the like respectful. And I think your older crowd will be, you know, we're enemies, but responsibly. But I agree. I think your college kids, your recent graduates, Tuesday night game, place is going to be jam packed with about 6,000 of your closest friends.
They're gonna let them know.
He's going to hear something, but I think it's going to turn into a 9 innings of you're our enemy and a respectful send off is kind of how I see that playing out. Like, we aren't upset because we beat you at your place. Hopefully we beat you at ours. So what do we have to be spiteful about? Like, you did what was best for you.
Right.
All love.
It's not like we dipped as a program, right?
All love, you know?
I'll say that it's gonna make for, like, we had the storyline the last time, but now this is the plot, right? Like, we knew the storyline. This is the plot. Like, the plot is thickening. We're we know exactly how it's going to go. Does it play out the way we want it to? And I can't wait till it's going to be some storybook. It's going to be Danny Beal standing on the mound, or Wyatt Lunsford Chinkman standing on the mound, ninth inning, two outs. Who comes up to bat? No, none other than Alek Makarevich. Tie and run on first. What's going to happen? And it's going to be absolutely electric next week in CLS. I wish more than anything that I could be there. Because I do. I think the crowd will be respectable. And most of the time, they are. And then you'll have the students out in right field that luckily he's going to be far away from them at third base. He won't have to hear them. He'll probably have to deal more with them when he's warming up. But it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be a lot of fun seeing what goes on next Tuesday night. And if ECU can come out and blast them again, that would be the cream of the crop. That would be the icing on the cake. To be able to do that and say, okay, you left us for another man. All right, well, we're in our glow up phase. So, want to mention last week, Tyler Savage. I think Brandon, you mentioned it a little bit ago. Tyler Savage named pitcher of the week in the American Athletic Conference after his part in the combined no hitter. But then Riley Johnson, I mean, out of the clouds. I mean, come on down, son. Just absolutely on fire. Helped ECU get to 4-1 on the week last week. Hit .533, 8-for-15 with 8 runs scored, 2 doubles, a triple, a home run, and 6 RBI. He had a hit and scored a run in all 5 contests. Had 3 runs driven in 2 of the Pirates games against Charlotte over the weekend. Absolutely phenomenal. I mean, then you come to find out, I think on Monday, his grandfather passed away. He hit a bomb the next day, caught the ball to finish the game on a – if he doesn't catch that ball, the game's over against William & Mary. And what a – we haven't even talked about that. What a absolute
– barn burner.
Insane game. I hate that I didn't watch the game. 5.5 hours. I hate that I didn't watch the game, but I wasn't going to give any more money to Flow Sports. All my homies hate Flow Sports. But yeah, I mean, it was a knockdown, drag out fight. You throw a punch, I throw a punch. You throw a punch, I throw a punch. Who's going to throw the last punch? And ECU did, but I mean, William & Mary was threatening. And what was it, the 14th inning, I believe, 13th inning?
I think it went to 13.
I think so.
Absolutely wild. ECU had 20 strikeouts in the game for the first time since 1970. Just wild. But that was on a night, and everybody was concerned. Oh, we're losing to William & Mary. Oh, we can't lose to William & Mary. We can't do this. We can't do that. If you look around the country that night, all the top teams lost to other teams that are seen as lower to them. Alabama lost to UAB. I want to say Florida State lost to Stetson or somebody like that. I mean, there was a lot of what you call upsets across the country on Tuesday night, and ECU survived. Right, that's all you can do, and their RPI jumped to number 8, and that's all you can ask for. Do your job, go out there and do your job, and take care of your business. Don't worry about anybody else. Take care of your business. And ECU did that. Next up, Wichita State at home this weekend. Do have some notes on Wichita State. First off, it's gonna be quite possibly all 3 games being pitching duels. I think that Friday night it's gonna be a close game. Don't expect ECU to run away with a game during this series. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll say that ECU's offense, if they can get hot, like they've been known to do, where they string across different runs or they'll have an inning where they have four or five runs and just absolutely lay it on them. They need to be more consistent on being able to do that. Of course, you can't ask for five runs an inning, right? That's just not going to happen. But having an offense that isn't hot and cold like ECU has been at times, and then making sure that you take care of business and shut down the other team in those high leverage situations, I think ECU will be just fine if they can do that. And then we already talked about next week, the midweek game, NC State, 6 o'clock in Greenville.
Okay.
State is playing Carolina this weekend. Playing tonight. I don't have an update on that score. But yeah, it's good for the RPI to beat up on those ACC schools. I mean, NC State took 2 of 3 from Clemson this past weekend, number 2 in the country. So there's a lot to be said about beating this team multiple times.
Yep.
This year. Anything else? Have I forgotten anything? All right.
A lot of bases.
Covered all our bases. Punny. I'm the dad of this podcast. All right, walk the plank. I feel like there's a lot of ammo for walk the plank this week. I feel like there's a lot going on. We're starting to get into that time where people are kind of on edge. They don't have football to relieve their stress, right? Like, what's y'all's walk the plank this week?
Well, if I'm going to go first, I don't – like, I'm not really mad at anything. You know, I did just get off a boat, coming off a vacation, very, very happy.
I'm on a boat.
On a boat. Peace, love, and hair grease. But I will say I guess my walk the plank is sayonara and a bid farewell to one of the great dynasties in basketball history. And that is one Golden State Warriors. I think the dynasty is over. I think it's a wrap. I think Steph, Clay, Draymond, that core unit, that three, I don't think they're ever going to get back to the NBA Finals together. I don't think they're ever going to win a championship again together. But what a great run it was. I mean, 4 championships in, 7, 8 years. They've been together for a decade plus. Absolutely. I mean, they prevented LeBron from probably having 6 or 7 rings, to be completely honest with you. So what a great run that they had. But, yeah, I think the dynasty's over. I think Sacramento ended that, a couple nights ago. But not necessarily a walk the plank because they're such a great team, great dynasty, but a bid farewell to great Warriors dynasty with Steph, Clay, and Draymond. So that will be my walk the plank for this week.
It was a little poetic, that game. Klay Thompson going 0 of 10 from the field. And then Harrison Barnes, a member of the Golden State Warriors dynasty, knocking down that late game 3 is kind of like his final good riddance, So that's a good one, Artie. I'm going to go ahead and do mine, and it's going to be within the same realm. I said earlier my number and my walk the plank had a theme, and I'm a Pats fan, but I'm also a Celtics fan. So my walk the plank is going to be the National Basketball Association as a whole.
Okay.
So the Boston Celtics had their playoff spot clinched in December. They have been lapping all of the other teams since then. They are the number one seed with a home court advantage through the entire playoffs. They had a 14-game lead on second place in the Eastern Conference and at least 7 games on the best team in the West, clearing away the best team in the league. So that makes you think, man, that must be a super team. They've got to have at least 4 All-Stars, right? Like, that team is crazy. No, we had 2 All-Stars, one in Jason Tatum, the other in Jaylen Brown, where Jason Tatum sacrificed his minutes in the All-Star game to let Jaylen Brown be on the court a little more. So, okay, they don't have an all like super team. Surely coach of the year doing a lot with like nothing, right? Not even in the running. Not even in the running. Okay, well, surely, you know, you had two All-Stars, not coach of the year, but you've got to have the leading MVP candidate, best player on the best team doing the most with no All-Stars. No, Jason Tatum's maybe fifth or sixth in MVP conversations right now. Okay. So not coach of the year, not MVP, not a lot of All-Stars. Brad Stevens, executive of the year, got to be a lock. Offseason, went and got Drew Holiday, signed him to an extension for less than he was asking for. Went and got Porzingis, locked up the paint a little bit. Just all around made this team better. Not looking like that's happening either. Question for you. What's going on? How are we so much better than all these other teams? But no one's the best at what they're doing? Make it make sense to me. I don't get it. I'm not going to get it. Boston, go win a ring, baby.
I was just going to say that, though, because I tend to agree with you. But the Celtics have too good of a team to not go win a chip this year. They got to go win a chip. They got to fly through the East. And then they got to – obviously, I'm thinking they're going to see Denver in the finals. They got to get a chip.
I want nothing more than for them to go win Banner 18 this year, and every year, honestly. But this looks like the year that it needs to get done more than any. But yeah, the whole NBA as a whole can take a swift swim in the water and walk the plank from here. So,
like it.
Over to you, Jared.
Can I wake up from my nap now?
Shut up, Jared.
I'm kidding, guys. I've got two, and one of them's an extension of mine from last week. The Arizona Coyotes have officially announced that they are relocating the team to Salt Lake City. Owner of the Utah Jazz, Ryan Smith, has purchased the team, but basically what's happening is they're moving the team. The players and some staff are going to be moved to Utah. The franchise is going defunct, but the players are moving to a new franchise. It's considered an expansion team. Now, the Arizona Coyotes, guys, for the last 2 years have been playing in Arizona State's hockey arena. Yep. Mullet Arena, right? Quite fitting name, if you ask me. With that arena holds 5,000 people at best, right? Like, not many more than that. They have been, for the longest time, an embarrassment to the NHL. And it's not their fans' fault. It's that purely on the ownership's fault that They've had many ownership transitions over the years. They've really only been around since the mid 90s, but they've lost everything because they've never been able to find a good owner. Morello, I think Alex Morello is the name of the former Coyotes owner. He bought the team, I believe, about 10 years ago, for $300 million. He could never get an arena deal done with Scottsdale, Tempe, Phoenix. He could never get an arena deal done. He could never build an arena. And it comes out this week that the Coyotes earlier this year had to prepay for their hotels and flights, because they were not paying for their hotel bills when they were traveling on the road. They were just, all right, we're going to play this game, and then we're going to dip. Like,
it's a professional hockey team.
It's a professional hockey team. Like, what are you talking about? He bought the team for $300 million probably about 10 years ago. The NHL has always had a problem with the Coyotes, but they want Gary Bettman, the commissioner, wants hockey to work in the desert. If you don't have hockey in the desert, you don't have the guy, a guy like Austin Matthews in the league. Austin Matthews came pretty damn close to being the first 70 goal scorer in the last 30 years, I believe. With that, Alex Morello should be out of the league completely. He sells his stake in the team to Ryan Smith. The NHL, what does the NHL do with Alex Morello? They say, okay, you're selling this team that you bought for $300 million. You get to sell them for $1 billion. He made a quick $1 billion off of selling this team that didn't have an arena, was already behind on their checks, all of that. Of course, he's going to have to pay off that debt first. But they said, in 5 years, if you can figure it out, we're going to give you another franchise. Or you're going to be able to bring back this franchise as an expansion team and get all these benefits of being an expansion team, which is you don't have to abide by the salary cap for like the first 3 or 4 years. You get to pick a player from each team in the league to bring into your organization. That there's a reason that the Vegas Golden Knights went to the Stanley Cup their first year in the league and then won the Stanley Cup last year. There's a reason that the Seattle Kraken went to the Stanley Cup playoffs their second year in the league and won a playoff round against the defending Stanley Cup champs. There's a reason that they've done that so well is because the expansion rules are mm-hmm. set up to be really, really well for expansion teams. I say all that to say, why are you going to give this guy an opportunity after he's already shit the bed multiple times? You're going to give him another opportunity? This is not somebody you want in your league. He's just going to bring down the valuation. He has 5 years to figure it out and bring the franchise back. With all that being said, he is still going out and bidding on a land grant or on a land auction in June that's going to be upwards of $1.5 billion. So this $1 billion that they just gave him, he's going to try to buy, I believe it's 98 acres in Scottsdale, Arizona, so that he can build an arena. Nobody, none of the city councils, nobody in the local government want them there. They don't want them, this guy, to build an arena anywhere with them because they didn't pay a lease. They wouldn't sign Tempe wanted them to sign a 12-year lease. They wouldn't sign it because they knew, and they strung their fans along for the last 10 years. Oh, we're going to keep this team here. They strung their fans along, and now they're gone. And last night, they did it under the color of darkness. The team found out about it via Twitter. The team found out that they were going to get moved over Twitter. Going to have to uproot their whole lives because of this. So, Arizona Coyotes, Alex Morello, really? You can walk the damn plane because you're a scumbag. And then the second one.
No, hold on. First, RIP to some of the best uniforms in the NHL.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, yeah. Coyotes have some great uniforms. That is, yeah.
RIP. I mean, those are some of the best ones out there. The Kuchina jersey. But if they come back, if somebody brings a team back to Arizona, they can have those jerseys. They'll be able to start that franchise back up. All right. My other one. Did y'all see this interaction between this reporter and Caitlin Clark?
Oh, yeah. The heart sign one.
Is that the heart sign? That was so awkward.
So weird.
I don't know. Like, in the media, be professional, right? Like, just don't be a jack off, right? Like,
it's not even a hard task. Like, just be a normal person. It's not even hard.
Like, I get asking a question like, okay, you know that she does this after every game. Maybe you don't know why. Maybe ask that question. So, what is this? What are you doing with that?
Right.
Are you trying to maybe get into a story there? I get it. That's maybe what you do. You don't go down this awkward conversation with her about, "Oh, if you do that to me, I'll whatever he said, we'll be good." Mm-hmm. Really, really freaking awkward. That's a walk the plank. And then he tried to say, "Oh, I was awfully and awkward, and it didn't come out the way I wanted it to." No, you were being sexist and misogynistic, and it came out the way that it came out, and everybody's calling you on your bullshit now. All right. And this, I mean, this is the biggest superstar in women's basketball since, I mean, Brianna Griner came out, right? Like,
yeah.
That's, or Brittany Griner. I'm thinking of, what is it, Breonna Stewart?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brittany Griner, Cheryl Miller before that. I mean, she's up there with those types.
Now, I do want to mention there's a lot of people talking about the pay in the WNBA. And I'll be honest, I've never watched a WNBA game. Still not going to watch a WNBA game.
Oh, come on, Jared.
People complaining about $76,000. Look, every entry-level contract in every sport is low. I mean, you go into the NHL, your entry-level contract is not going to be some $100 million contract, right? It's not like the NBA or not like the NFL. The WNBA, that's just supply and demand.
Right.
I'm not like
the product.
It's not value. It's not as valuable as
these women are not going to be making $1 million contracts because the supply or the demand is not, it's just not there. Right.
Right. So, I mean, sorry about it.
But let's not act like she didn't just sign $1 million deal with Nike.
She wasn't. It was $20 million.
She's not broke.
20 plus. The exact numbers haven't been decided, but it's said that it will be in excess.
Nobody should be crying the river for Caitlin Clark. She's not going to be a broke person.
She's going to be just fine. There's 12 teams in the league. What? 15 players on the roster, if that. Come on. I will say one professional women's league that is really popping off. If you haven't checked it out, Professional Women's Hockey League just started this year. Check it. It's electric. Check it out. I do enjoy watching that. All right. Gambling corner. Bad beats of the week. Anybody got a bad beat?
I don't have a bad beat, personally.
Jared, me and Jared are in this, and Artie's the like non-degenerate friend who's like, responsibly.
I do gamble. Now, I haven't gambled in the last 2 weeks. I gotta get back into it. But not trust. I'm gonna be with you, fellas. I'm gonna be there.
I've taken a couple days off. I'm taking a couple days off, just trying to reset my focus and get ready for this stretch of NHL playoffs.
It's a deadly game. It's an addictive and deadly game.
Yeah, I have hit a couple decent ones. I had that $3 into $1,000 the other week for the PGA,
absolutely insane.
Whatever it was.
The fact that you just texted us, "Oh yeah, this happened."
It's casual.
Like, come on, man. You got to let us know about some of these.
Okay, but no, that wasn't even one that I bet on with knowledge. I try to bet stuff that I know. Like, so if I'm going to tell you about something, I want it to be something that I know. That was my spare change on that app. I had $3, which was going to go nowhere. So I found the longest odds on the like craziest bet and said, "Have my money." And you know what? Right this second, for another $1,000, I couldn't tell you either of the two names of those guys that I bet on. That's how little I know about them. So I'm like, okay, sure. Put the money on these two guys to be bogey free in the fourth round. That could happen.
And gamble then, responsibly, people.
Gamble responsibly. Yeah. First and foremost. But sometimes you hit. That's all I'm going to say.
Sometimes you just like, fuck it.
Shooters shoot, and like that one went in.
Oh, I love it. Now, my bad beat, I had a parlay that all I needed was two shots on goal from Seth Jarvis, a guy that had been averaging four shots on goal for the last three or four games. I needed two shots from him to win some big money. I say big money. It would have won me about $500. And he just every single time he passed the puck. He had wide open shots and was passing the puck. And I was like, shoot the freaking puck, dude. That lost me $500. Or I didn't lose $500, but could have been $500 in the wallet. So that's my bad beat. All right. Talking about playoffs starting. Current Stanley Cup win odds. Hurricanes are +650. I think they have the best odds to win the Stanley Cup going into the playoffs. I already locked them in at +900 earlier in the year, so I'm good.
Solid.
There you go.
All right. Now, you were talking about the Celtics earlier. Celtics are currently +150. Nuggets +300. I have no idea anything about basketball.
I just feel like there's so much competition in the game that, like, 150 doesn't sound like enough. But, I mean, I don't know. It goes back to what I was saying earlier. You clearly don't respect us. You don't want to put us in the MVP talk. You don't want to put us in the All-Star game. You don't want to give us Coach of the Year. Why are we so heavily favored? Are we the best team or are we not? Figure it out.
The Celtics got to get it done this season. They got to. Like, the East is as weak as it's been in a long time. You got Joel Embiid out there limping around. You got Milwaukee doesn't know what the hell they want to do. The Knicks are a great story, but they don't have enough right now. The Celtics really should cruise to the East. And then when they see Denver, I don't know. Denver-Boston's a toss-up. It really is. Because Jokic can just take over a game whenever the hell he wants to. But I think Boston's got to get it done.
So the Sixers, it is helpful that Embiid is injured. But at the same time, if you look at our track history with the Sixers, we have a secret weapon in Al Horford, who is 50 years old.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Al
Horford is the Joel Embiid stopper.
He's beating them up, yeah.
My man is 50 years old, limping onto the court, but you show him Embiid, and my man turns into prime Shaq in the paint. Like, yeah, yeah. He abuses that man. So Sixers, I'm not that worried about. I think the Knicks have an interesting team that could get good at the wrong time. I think they're concerning.
They're interesting. I just don't think they have enough.
I hope so. I hope you're right. I would hate for them to be the upset like Cinderella story this year. And the Bucks, Giannis is injured. That was a mistake they made. Like, you were kind of locked into your spot. Why are you, you know?
Right.
They could be a challenge, but I see in a 7-game series, we take them in 6. I don't know.
I think Boston's biggest issue is going to be Denver when they see Denver in the final. You got to hope somebody in the West can take out Denver. I think that's Boston's biggest obstacle.
Well, watch out for the dark horse in the Mavericks.
They're playing good basketball. Yeah,
Luka is a generational talent, and when Kyrie gets going, Kyrie is a problem.
He's unstoppable. When Kyrie wants to get a bucket, he's going to get a bucket.
He is a bucket.
Yeah, he's unstoppable.
All right.
Welcome back to the show, Garrett.
No, I was just looking at DraftKings, seeing if I had any other bets for the weekend, but I don't. All right. I think that's it. Good show, guys.
Yes.
Brandon, we just need to have you on more. I don't know. That felt good. All right. Make sure to follow us at Boneyard Podcast on social media, on Twitter, Instagram, at the Boneyard Podcast on TikTok. We're proud to be members of the Variety Sports Network. So shout out to them. Lots of great content going on. The 5-Hole Podcast gearing up for the NHL playoffs. And then subscribe to us on YouTube. If you're watching right now, I see a lot of you are watching right now. I mean, close to 200 people watching from what I see. Subscribe on YouTube. All right? Do that. You're a friend of the podcast. If you don't, Artie, what can they do?
Walk the damn link.
For sure. And then also leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to your podcast, whether that's on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcast, iHeartRadio. I think we're there. I don't really know anymore. Wherever you listen to your podcast, leave us a 5-star review. Write something nice. Tell Brandon, hey, You're a good lawyer. Congratulations. And if you do that, once again, friend of the podcast, Brandon, if they leave us anything less than a 5-star review, what can they do?
I'm legally obligated to say walk the damn plank.
You're damn right you are. If you don't do it, walk the damn plank. That's all I got. Artie, let's get out of here.
Hey, it's good to be back, Pirate Nation. Let's get it. Wash your hands, wash your butts. As always, great episode. Deuce.
Peace.